is very wonderful for us all to be able to come together in the evening and hear these anti-stress sounds. Naturally, during your day of activity in the city, your mind picks up so much anxiety and you become fraught with so much tension, especially brought about by false expectations, false hopes. And naturally, throughout the day, there are disappointments. People let you down, and you let others down. And things you thought were going to satisfy you turn out not to be satisfactory. In this way, by the time the day ends, your mind is so pressured. Now, if you're an ordinary, foolish person, what's the first thing you think of at the day's end? Find some intoxication to relieve the mind. A few drinks, a few smokes. That's how you think to relieve yourself. Of course, that's the solution of the fools. The intoxication, the alcohol, the smoke, of course, doesn't solve your anxiety, your tension, your stress problem. It just puts a covering on it. So for a while, you don't see it. But still, it's there. It's growing. By coming together like this and hearing the spiritual sound vibration, true divine sound vibration, glorifying Krishna, easily the stresses and strains of the day are released. But that's just the tip of the iceberg, so to speak. Do we have some hearing? You have the email? Okay. The immediate effect you'll notice of chanting Hare Krishna like this is that the mirror of your mind becomes cleansed of all the contaminants and toxins that you pick up, accumulate. These contaminants and toxins have been there from birth after birth. So they have a long history. The rust is really set in deep. So you're coping with the contaminations from many births. And on top of all that, you're piling up new stuff that you pick up during the day. So in this way, as the days pass in your life, you're just more and more surcharged with major and minor traumas, and disappointments, and frustrations, and false hopes, and so many clashes you have to deal with. Fight your way to work or to school. Think about how to get ahead. Think about how to even just hold your place. This is the information age, supposedly, so much stuff is sitting on your brain, and you can't really even select what are your priorities in life. There's so much non-essential information swimming around in your head. Oh, this way, a thick mold of useless trash surrounds you. But when you come here and you just soak up the sound vibration of the kirtan. Kirtan is glorification of Krishna. Then you feel all your falsely accumulated anxieties just drift away. Our anxieties are falsely acquired because they are the result of misidentification. We think that the body and mind is the self. And in this way we load ourselves up with so many hallucinations. It's the same as if I think I'm this sweatshirt. Obviously I would cause myself a lot of complications thinking I'm this. So if you think you're the body and mind, you catch yourself a lot of unnecessary complications. So many things you've got to do, you think, which actually don't relate to you. They don't relate to the real you. But society is pushing this on you. Your family and friends are pushing this on you. In fact, you can't separate your own aspirations, which are self-originated, from the aspirations pushed upon you by others. You can't draw the line. I'm speaking materially, not about the spiritual self. Even in terms of your material aspirations, your material drives and ambitions, you can't draw the line and separate those drives and ambitions and aspirations that you legitimately fabricated for yourself and those that are pushed on you from your outside environment. So this is a big problem. So all these hallucinations, both self-originated and pushed upon you by others, just crowd your life. And naturally you're stressful. Sometimes, I know, people wonder, well, who am I trying to please anyway? I mean, I'm trying to please myself, but who am I? What is my identity? Is myself others' expectations, my expectations? I can't even see the difference. I have to do this. I have to do that. This is expected of me. That is expected of me. Any of you ever felt like that? And then you try to act in such a way to fulfill someone's expectations, and you're disappointed. They're not satisfied. You're not satisfied. That really makes you tense. Wait a minute. I was trying to satisfy you, but you're not satisfied. And even worse, I'm not satisfied by trying to satisfy you. What's the use of all this? And then you just panic. Ah! You do something extreme, you know, like quit your job, or quit school, or throw your partner out, or something or another. Only to, a few days later, a few weeks later, pile upon yourself another scene, equally as illusory. And then you wonder, wait a minute, haven't I been this way before? Have I gone down this road before? What's going on? Why do I repeat these things? Maybe some of you had the experience, you promised yourself, never again. Yeah. Never again. And then what happened? Huh?
I haven't drank for a while, but I've said that quite a few times and done it again.
What made you say never again?
Just feeling really ill after drinking alcohol.
The next morning?
Yeah, or that night.
Mm-hmm. And why did you do it when you did it?
Just to have fun.
Yeah. What's the fun like?
What's it like? It's just doing what most people do in the material world to have fun.
What's that?
Get drunk.
Well, why do you do that?
Because that's what most people are doing.
Say, with some friends, or, you know, it's after a distressing day, and someone just says, hey, let's just start drinking. Or, what do they really want? They want relief. They want to feel all the burdens go upwards. Lift off their shoulders. That's what they want. They want that feeling. And the alcohol gives you that feeling for a while. Suddenly, you don't feel that burden pressing down on you. And everything is mirthful and merry. And you can do dumb things and then later blame it on the alcohol, right? So the real thing is, you're looking for relief. People, I've heard, they think the alcohol brings out spontaneous behaviors. Is that so? You just, and then you also find yourself being very sociable, bubbly, right? It takes away your inhibitions, and you can feel like you're the life of the party. Yes, all these things are important.
You're asking me. Yeah. If they're important. Not really.
No, I mean, but when you're doing them, you thought they're important.
Yeah.
Naturally, when you go to a social gathering or a party, you want to feel like you've got something to offer, right? And so I guess the alcohol gives you that sense of confidence and assurance. You're plugged in. You're tuned in.
Well, even if you don't want to do it, like everyone else is, so you kind of feel you have to in a way, and everyone, like, if you're just ready to give in, if someone goes, oh, go on, what, you're not drinking? Come on, have a drink, they'll just buy you one anyway. And, you know, you just end up drinking even if you don't want to, if you're in that situation.
So what happens?
So you just don't go out with them, or you just don't go out, you just try and find another activity.
But at first, you were saying you were trying it for relief, and then it was just social pressure?
I think it's always been, for me, it's always been just because everyone else is doing it.
And you didn't know any other way of self-expression?
Yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. I've never really done it on my own. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, so some people drink on their own, don't they? That's considered a very lonely life to drink on your own. Is that fair?
Older people.
So even if you're a young single person or a young adult single, you just rather than drink alone, what, you go to a pub or something? Hope to see somebody you know there, or pretend you know somebody, or at least talk to the, what do you call the guy behind the counter?
Barman.
You talk to him like, hey, yeah, just to, you know, right? You know somebody. Yeah? That's all people have to look forward to. I remember last summer, I was in London, in Soho, and I, for the first time, saw what I was told was the British tradition of on a summer evening after work, after everyone just congregates outside in the pubs. They do that here too, in Manchester. I've been wondering what all these people doing, standing outside the pubs with glasses in their hand. And I was explaining to them ancient sacred ritual. So all I could see was people wanting relief. I could see minds that were just looking to let steam off. And everyone, I could also feel, everyone wanted to bubble. They wanted to just gush. And the alcohol was helping them. They were just there with the cups in their hand. And I can see, you know, their hearts want to have exchanges. They want to gush. And so the alcohol is aiding them in that. the alcohol creates a whole imaginary world of fluidity, it's flowing, you know? It's like everyone's connected to the same thing, you know? The alcohol gives that illusory sense of, you know, we're all in it together. Everyone's looking confident artificially because of the alcohol. The ladies are looking confident, you know, holding their glass and holding their own in the conversation. The men are feeling confident. No one's feeling insecure. They like that, right? No one's feeling insecure. Very important. You went through those days in your youth? That wasn't your scene. Yeah.
I get a little shocked that it didn't quite end.
The social scene? No.
I tried a bit, but, you know, it didn't quite feel like I was really a part of it.
Why did you try?
Yeah, I tried just going out with people drinking and
the pubs or something.
Yeah, but the whole time you can't just do it halfway anyway. It's like, if you go somewhere and there's a few times that you don't, unless people are drinking, it's like you're just really grumpy and you can't do anything. And then it's just, I don't know, the whole time I never really felt like I was, that was really the thing, but I gave it a shot though.
You're saying you can't half do it?
No, I found that it was just, I don't know what it was, I just didn't. I tried to do it because I thought that was what you need to do. But,
what do you mean half do it? Can't just drink a little?
Yeah, well, no, you can't just, you know, because it doesn't taste that great. It doesn't drink.
So, I always wondered about that.
That was a big illusion, actually. I always thought when the adverts and everything was really good, but.
I always figured, you know, I mean, why don't you just take the alcohol straight? Because that's what really everyone's drinking for, right? It's not so much the taste, is it?
You can drink a lot of it. If you take enough of it and stuff to make it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't drink small quantities. It's like drinking lemonade. I don't get drunk. Mm-hmm. I like the taste of it.
The alcohol?
No, the beer.
Why don't you take non-alcoholic beer?
Good question.
Because there's something missing. You want the relief.
I don't get drunk. I only drink 2 half pints, maybe, and that's it.
But why do you do it?
I don't know. I've got into the habit now.
Ah!
I'm thinking of giving it up, though, because it's happening.
Why can't you just, you know, why does it have to be alcohol in it?
That's my question.
Social conditioning.
I went for a health checkup recently, and the report said that 1/2 pint of beer was as fattening as a slice of chocolate cake. So, I ate too much at Christmas and I want to lose some weight, so I stopped drinking beer for about a week. You know. And I want to lose some weight, I might start drinking it afterwards.
Why?
Because I like the taste.
You like the alcohol?
Well, I like the taste of beer. I don't
you like the alcohol?
Do I?
Yes.
But I don't get drunk.
That's alright, it does something to you. You like it. It makes you relax, right? So you can sit in front of the TV and watch the news all day. Right?
Mm-hmm. I sometimes go to the pub, I sometimes drink at home.
Alone?
Alone, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you have friends at the pub, or?
Well, I know some of the people at the pub, because I go there regularly.
So you expect to see them there?
Yeah, well, I know the people behind the counter. Uh-huh. And I know some of the locals.
So you discuss the news with them?
It's all various things.
My point is, this is just one of the things that people do to escape anxiety. It's a very important human activity. Escape anxiety, escape the pressure. And it's more like that now than ever before. Everyone is stressed out these days. I saw the latest statistics. For teenagers, 1 out of 4 UK teenagers has stress problems. The number one reason is seeing their parents break up and having so many relationship problems. The number two reason is school pressure. It's that's a big thing. How to escape stress. People turn to alcohol, they turn to relationships. Through relationship, they hope absorption in flesh will give a relief, a release. So again, they put so much pressure on each other. You've got to give me that relief. You've got to make the world go away for me. You've got to perform for me and just wipe my mind free of all anxiety. In this way, actually, you just increase their stress loads. So, the first effect you'll feel by chanting Hare Krishna, whether by yourself or with others, like we've just done, is that the stress will go away. The stress of misidentification. Thinking that the body is the self. Thinking the body is the self fills your consciousness with so many false plans, false hopes. Miserable. But you don't have any choice because the environment you're living in is saturated with false plans and false hopes. Just think of the things that are your program, your goals, your modus operandi. Where do you get it from? I'm a man, this is what I got to do. I'm a woman, this is what I got to do. All these assumed obligations. As you said, you were a teenager. When you're a teenager, you definitely got to do some things, right? It takes a very heroic person to be able to separate himself or herself from all these false falsity. But it can be done so easily simply by hearing the transcendental sound of Hare Krishna. So by your coming in the evening and hearing the mantra meditation, you know it. You know what's happening. You start to think after a while, hey, how much of what I'm doing in my life is really necessary? You notice that happening? You notice that? Yeah. That's the effect of the sound vibration. The divine sound of Hare Krishna revives your spiritual intelligence. So you start considering after a while, wait a minute now, what am I doing here? Okay. I really have to go through all I'm going through. Whereas before hearing the transcendental sound of Hare Krishna, you just naturally assume, yeah, this is what life's about, this is what I'm doing, I've got to do this, this is the way the world works, this is the way I work. But just by hearing the divine sound of Hare Krishna, you start reevaluating. And you start to feel clouds of illusion start to part and the Krishna sun shines through. That's the first effect of chanting Hare Krishna. Your materialistic fever goes down. First you have to recognize you have a materialistic fever. It's hard to recognize because in ordinary life people vie to have the highest possible fever. Who can have the most material desires? It's competition. Who can burn with temporary desires the most? But when you hear the sound vibration, Hare Krishna, you notice that cooling effect. Your materialistic fever comes down and you're able to evaluate your life properly. You see, we're in material life, we're actually afraid of ourselves. You ever realize that? People are afraid of themselves? That's why you bury yourself in the news all day or in some hobby, in some pursuit of making money or just conquering the opposite sex. It's something to absorb yourself in so you can hide from yourself. You don't figure that out?
Yeah, I can
believe it. You ever see the kind of ladies who just like collect men one after another? Because in doing that, they don't have to think. They don't have to think about themselves. It's something that works for them. Apparently, it's successful. Just one's the other. Just like someone acquires consumer goods. People these days, some of them acquire relationships. And it keeps them from having to think about themselves. You ever watch something like that?
Yeah.
It's like artificially keeping themselves busy. You ever go to a zoo and see monkeys? They're very busy all the time. I was just in India. I was less than 2 weeks ago. And then you see monkeys all the time. And they're just always doing something. Swinging from branch to branch, chattering. They're just always busy. You don't expect a monkey to kind of just sit down quietly and think about itself. And suddenly people keep themselves busy like that. Similarly, sure. You know men who are just into the female conquest just for the sport of it all? You know? Just something to do, you know? Yes, you know men like that? Yeah? You know men like that? It's just, it's life, Fills up the days and nights, It's actually very desensitizing. But, it's something to do. And it gives them a lot to talk about, When they're around other guys. Yeah, I was with her last night. It seems like their life's full of something, Or the men fill up their life with sports. Worrying about, I shouldn't say this here, but worrying about what Man U's doing or what's Arsenal doing or something. And the ladies, they're into fashions, All these things fill up your life artificially. People are actually afraid of a vacuum. Oh no. I've got nothing to hide behind. I've got no diversions. Horrible feeling. That ever happened to you as a teenager? I've got nothing. Everybody else has got it. Got that, huh? What age did that hit you?
Probably quite a long time.
What age?
I felt like that for, since I was about 12 years.
I've got nothing. Everybody else has got everything. They figured you had to make up for lost time, huh?
Yeah. Never quite clicked.
Did you ever feel like that?
Yeah, but everyone else is better off than you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all having good times.
Yeah.
They're all dynamic personalities. Right? They got all the friends. They got all the fun. Mm. You don't have it, right? What did you think? You just wanted to care for the children.
Yeah,
huh?
I don't really sex my father really wants to do something now that everybody else has got. And you have one. Yeah. I think probably one of the reasons why I miss myself in my job and scooted halfway down the road and went into all the things and what have you.
Went to you?
Looking for fulfillment, we're looking for.
Went to where?
I went into a couple of countries that were in political disputes, so there's where the mind was, she's going there. And basically,
maybe in there to give humanitarian aid. More for me.
Where'd you go?
I think that was just basically trying to focus on something other than myself in my situation. It was easy.
Where'd you go?
So Ivory Coast, around the end of the world, West Africa, sort of what you call it.
As a nurse or something?
I went in with sort of the UN and the Red Cross. So basically to help with humanitarian aid, set up orphanages and refuge for women. I think that's basically, again, is just to focus on other people.
Yeah.
It's easier to focus on other people than focus on yourself.
And you also get distinction for it.
No, I think probably post-traumatic stress.
Still, when you're around the right, when you're around most people, when I've been doing humanitarian work, that's just not that. The Ivory Coast, I was with the UN people.
No, they just think you're intensely mad.
He's a do-gooder, he's a helper. Wouldn't do it myself, but,
But they always like to say, sort of, how much did you earn? Then you got nothing.
The guy looks like you fool,
right? Yes.
Well, you're pretty smart to realize you were doing that just to kind of, it's easy to immerse yourself in others, so you don't have to deal with myself.
3 months that I actually sort of realized that. Just too busy, so it's easier to deal with other people's problems and to deal with other people's situations and sort of think about your own situation.
Mm.
A nice diversional tactic thing.
Well, then you're definitely a genuine candidate for Krishna consciousness if you can figure that out. Bhakti yoga is the proper arena for your heart's full intentions. The proper arena does exist. So, we're speaking about the preliminary effects of mantra meditation, which you all are already experiencing. You see, so much contamination enters our life through sound vibration. Noise pollution doesn't simply mean someone's making a lot of noise in the city. There's also pollution of materialistic sound vibration. The volume doesn't have to be up high, but just the quality of the sound vibration pollutes your consciousness. That can all be changed by putting yourself in a situation where you can be immersed by the Hare Krishna mantra. And then, beyond the preliminary effects, there's the positive main effect that the mantra meditation revives your dormant spiritual identity. You begin to stop thinking like you're the body and mind, and you start to remember your spiritual aspirations, your spiritual desires, as part of Krishna, the Supreme Soul. So you benefit both through the negative and through the positive. The negative means that all the unwanted hallucinations, misidentifications, and so forth become cleansed out. The toxins affecting your consciousness become flushed. And then there's the main effect, the positive effect, that the Krishna conscious reality, your reality as spirit, soul, heart of Krishna that begins to dawn like the rising sun. So we want to make it known to more and more people that simply by coming in the evening and just sitting and hearing the spiritual Krishna conscious sounds, all the traumas and anxieties and hallucinations of the day can easily be discarded. So you're the first participants in this experiment. So I want you to think for a while about your hopes, about your aspirations. I think for real. Think about that. Every one of you has hopes. Every one of you has aspirations. I think for real. Would you actually have the courage to put your hopes and aspirations under a microscope and look, take a deep look at them? That's kind of scary. But feeling the soothing balm of chanting Hare Krishna together, you notice that you start to very inobtrusively acquire the courage and strength to take a look at your own hopes and aspirations. And you don't freak out. You notice that? It's an amazing thing about the Hare Krishna mantra. Because it's not nihilistic, it's not negative. Kill all desire. Kill the self, kill all hopes, kill all aspirations, kill all attachments. That would depress you. Although many people pretend they're going to be happy in that way. Yeah, I just attend a weekend seminar on annihilating all desires. You see people like that here. I just read a book on just killing the self. How the self doesn't exist. I just saw a great spiritual teacher who's teaching how to have no attachments for anything. These are all those buzzwords. Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, there must be desire, there must be attachment. So, the perfection of life means perfect desires, perfect attachment. And material illusion means you have the wrong desires, the wrong attachments. So the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to get you to be attached to Krishna. You must have attachment because you are a sentient, conscious being. But in material life, we're attached to matter as our prey, our quarry for pleasing ourselves. You can't kill attachment, just recognize you're attached to the wrong thing. So bhakti yoga means transferring the attachment from its illusory object, matter, to its correct object, Krishna. That's all. Do you think you could do that? You think you could do that? Yeah. After a while, the nature of the transcendentalist starts to appeal to you. Yeah. You feel an urge in your heart. Yeah, I can do that. Yeah. Not as freaky as I thought. What about you? What do you think? Yeah? Yeah.
Could I transfer my attachment from the material world to the spiritual service of Krishna. I'm not a devotee, and I don't think I ever will be. I'm pretty skeptical about everything.
Are you skeptical about that?
About what?
That you're skeptical about everything?
No.
So you're not skeptical about everything?
Well, probably not. If I believed what's in the Bhagavad Gita, perhaps I could. But ever since I was 12, I've believed in virtually nothing.
That's not true. You really believe that?
Well, I'd be skeptical about religion, politics, philosophy.
You can't live by being completely skeptical.
Well, I've managed to.
No. You've got some vested interest in something. Were you skeptical about thinking you're the body and mind?
Yes, I'm skeptical about that. Mm-hmm. I do keep an open mind. Mm-hmm.
In your life, there has to be something fixed. You can't be completely skeptical. Even to take the position of being a skeptic, that's a fixed thing. It's just your thing in life to be a skeptic. That's something.
That's my position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're attached to it.
I'm convinced that that's the way for me.
You're attached to it.
Yeah.
Okay, it's up there. You have something. It's your thing. It's your designation. She could say she's a photographer. You could say, at a party, someone asks me, what are you into? Yeah, photographer. And you could say, well, skeptic. It's one of those things, you know? You could say, I'm a helper. What do you could say, I'm a teenager who's turned to a night. What would you say if someone asked you, what's your thing?
Musician, singer.
Musician, singer. Meet everybody. Yeah, that sounds good. Huh? Maybe hits, they ask you that?
Yeah.
What do you tell them?
Not yet.
Yeah, every musician says that. Not yet. You're just on the verge, right? World's full of musicians who are right on the verge of being big. You notice that?
Last question? You mentioned about not being attached or being remaining attached to things, but being detached from them. Is that right?
You cannot kill attachment because you're a sentient conscious entity. So, material life means you're attached to the wrong things. You're attached to matter, the world of matter. Spiritual life means you're attached to spirit. You're attached to Krishna. The whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to get you to transfer your attachment from matter to Krishna. You cannot kill attachment, though.
Okay. So if I was to have a conscious conflict with Krishna on a regular basis, and maybe sow a seed of attachment through Krishna, and then allow it to blossom in its own way.
And what would blossom its own way?
Whatever the seed is.
Yes. By watering the seed of your contact with Krishna regularly, then your spiritual life begins to blossom and flourish. Right, you got that right. What kind of music do you do?
Soul and folk music.
Soul music?
Yeah.
Spirit soul music?
Well, Well, I try to touch people with music.
So you write music and lyrics and all that?
Yeah.
And of course, every musician, songwriter thinks if the world will just hear these lyrics, they'll change, right?
I'm skeptical about that.
Still, you hope.
Yeah.
Hey, listen to these lyrics, they'll change.
You're my score.
Just reading somewhere about the divas from my day who's still going on strong. Dionne Warwick, how she just got tired of all like the nihilistic, destructive rap musicians. So she just got them all, she invited them to come and record with her. And they all came because you know, record with Dionne Warwick. All these guys, Bobby Brown, this, that, the other. See, I had them all make a group rendition of what the world needs now is love. Yeah. You know that song, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, so all the musicians say, yeah, this is it, man. This is divine. This is pure. It's going to knock the world out. Yeah, you know that feeling, right? There's also self-delusion, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were in the studio with Dionne. Wow, it was just like flowing.
It's just all self-delusion.
And no one knows what love is. But if you can use musical talent for connecting people to Krishna, that's very much. It's like Hum Seeker, she's singing every evening. You could also. Her singing of the Hare Krishna mantra doesn't fill people with passion and ignorance. That's almost everything that passes for music these days does that. Right, so Dionne Warwick, she's complaining, you know, of all these young guys making this rap music, talking about, you know, hoes and this and that. Well, what is she offering? She objects to their hardcore, gross stuff, but she offers a sentiment. That's all. It's not gonna change the day either.
The lyrics of most pop songs are just nonsense phrases anyway. Don't make any sense.
Oh, don't tell musicians that. He doesn't understand, right? He doesn't understand.
I should do a green.
No, most of you, you're different than most musicians. No, these lyrics are about life, reality. Just gotta listen closer.
Yeah, the idea is to produce a nice sound.
Well, not necessarily. It's a provoke reaction. Not actually from that. Just to get the full process going and think about that.
So if you use your abilities to connect people to Krishna, and you'll feel fulfilled as a musician, you'll feel satisfied. You're doing your greatest good. You want to do charity work, you want to help others, reach out to others, then connect them to Krishna. That is the greatest welfare. You like the news? Study the news of the spiritual world. You know that. You're using your photographic abilities to get some pictures. Okay. We're doing a photographic presentation. Reality photos. The object is to, through photography, to get people to see what material life is really about.
Through photography can have delusion.
Hmm?
Through photography can have delusion.
Hmm?
Photography can have delusion.
Have delusion?
Hmm. I used to love science stuff, photography.
Oh, you did?
Dark room, stuff from how
it's
very good to actually manipulate pictures and then represent them and how many people have to take them as being real because of the way that you present them. So photography can portray a false image. And you see it in magazines all the time as well. Like an airbrushed and
right.
To present an image which actually the truth isn't actually correct.
So are you still doing photography? Or?
No, I gave it some many years ago.
You see, you gave up the sacred path. Is it possible that you give it up?
I sometimes hanker, sometimes I think, you know, I'd love to go into a dark room and start, you know.
What do you think? There's hope for
it? Yeah.
So there's an example. She's using her abilities to introduce people to reality. That's the best use of art. Are there any musicians who've done that of late, successfully?
Lost his mic.
Right. Things are pretty bad these days. Right. I can't think of. Oh, yes. But many years ago, not now. Great example, right from England. George Harrison used his music to bring people to Krishna consciousness. Still, he's famous for the song My Sweet Lord. And many people started chanting Hare Krishna from that. And he got the greatest satisfaction from that. He took this cover of Bhagavad Gita, and they were putting out records, not CDs, back in the 70s, and he put this on the, this picture on the, what do you call it, the record? The
sleeve.
Not the sleeve, the...
Little bit.
The thing in the middle. The thing in the middle of the wax. Also, he did the cover like this, too, on the sleeve, too. Living in the material world. So it made it very easy for us to interest people in Bhagavad Gita. That they had seen the picture or so it's an example of using one's talents for Krishna service.
It's sort of great to like this weekending doing that, because I took your word the other week, you know, when you're talking about not only ministering to people on a local point, but to minister somewhere. So through strange set of events, end up on a gyne,
end up what?
On a gyne unit.
Gynecology
unit, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I actually ended up talking to quite a few of them about Krishna and happy. Mm-hmm. It's well received, actually. Yeah.
There it is, there's your future. I was a young lad, a young monk, and we would go to George Harrison concerts in the States. He would go for these arenas, you know, 25,000 people. So we would go there for distributing Krishna consciousness literature. So I remember it was this big arena, Providence, Rhode Island, in the States, and 25,000 people. And he was playing. So I had like a big armful of Krishna books. Do you have a Krishna book? Actually, the first version of that book, George Harrison had paid for the publisher, and he had written the introduction. The introduction was called, "All You Need Is Love, All You Need Is Krishna." So, he was singing on the stage, and I just happened to fill my arms with about 50 of these books. I was standing in the aisle of the huge arena. And then he announced the song. His next song was, "I Miss You, Lord Krishna, Where Are You?" So he played the song. And after he finished, I just started, I just called out, "Krishna books, Krishna books." And like 100 people just, you know, swarmed towards me, you know, like a mob, you know. He pressed me up against the wall of the arena, and in 5 minutes, and my hands are empty. So that's the effect of a musician who's using his skills very dynamically for the ultimate good. Also, in the 70s, Stevie Wonder did that also. He had Krishna conscious practitioners chanting the Hare Krishna mantra on one of his albums. I think it's called The Secret Life of
Funk.
Yeah. I remember in Los Angeles, he got about 20 of us in the studio. Very gentle. So I don't want to exploit you. I just want you to sing from your heart like that. So this is an example of musicians working for the highest good. So you can use all your abilities. Just like Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. He's fighting for Krishna. So Bhagavad Gita is letting you know, if you can fight for Krishna, then certainly you can do other things for Krishna. It's very provocative how someone can fight for Krishna. That's the whole mystery of Bhagavad Gita, which intrigues you. How does he fight for Krishna in the world? That caused you to pursue the subject matter very closely. So I hope this gives you ideas what you can do for Krishna. Do you like charity work, philanthropy, welfare work? Okay. Do that for Krishna. Do you like the news? Find out about the spiritual news. The real news. Otherwise, in the material world, everything is old. Whenever you turn on the TV, I want you to think, okay, now I'm going to listen to the olds. There's nothing new.
Yeah. Well, people now seem to learn from history. It repeats itself endlessly.
What is the only thing I studied? That's a history university. What is the only thing you learned by studying history?
That people don't
learn
from
this. Right. What's the only thing you learn by watching the so-called news? There's nothing new.
Well, the small details change, but I suppose it's the same thing.
That change of small details just falsely occupies your mind and wastes your time. All right, let's turn to Bhagavad Gita. You can get out the Bhagavad Gita stuff. Okay. Well, first terms of the invocation on page one. Set up the atmosphere. Sound vibration. Om Jnana Chimaram Bhasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamayam Dadati Swa Parantitam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Kamsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Param Sahagaralita Sri Vishakam Vitamstha Hey Krishna Karana Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Sapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Amancha Topataruvyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Pajitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. All right, let's turn, please, to page 472. This chapter is called The Most Confidential Knowledge. Why is this chapter called The Most Confidential Knowledge? Because it does more than instruct you that you're a spirit soul, not the body. It goes further. It instructs you in what are the activities of the spirit, soul, and perfection. That's the most confidential knowledge. Unless you know what the spirit, soul does in perfection, you won't be attracted to revive your real identity. So you look at text 13, and we're going to find out what it means to be a Mahatma. In Sanskrit, Mahatma means great soul. Generally, people don't know Sanskrit. They hear the word Mahatma, and they think of course, Mahatma Gandhi, great politician. But Mahatma, according to the standard given in Bhagavad Gita, is something else. And you'll hear that directly from Krishna. All right. I'll read the Sanskrit. Mahatmanas tumam partha Daivim prakritim ashrita vajantyananna manaso yatra bhutanam avyayam.
O Samatha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible.
Yes. If you're not deluded, then you'll be under the protection of Krishna's divine nature, Krishna's divine energy. You're taking shelter of the divine nature instead of taking shelter of the illusory nature. Now the fact is, both the divine nature and the illusory nature emanate from Krishna. Just like light causes both light and shadow. Similarly, from Krishna comes both reality and illusion. You can choose. Shall you take shelter of the light or the shadow? Shall you take shelter of the divine nature or the material illusion nature? That's your choice in life. But you have to take shelter of something because you're not independent. Only Krishna, the source of all energies, is independent. Because you are energy, you are dependent by definition. Material life fills your consciousness with the delusion that I'm going to be independent. And you, throughout your whole life, you're trying to establish yourself in such a way that you won't be co-opted by others, won't be controlled by others. But that's impossible. Because you are a living entity, just a part of the Supreme, you must be dependent one way or the other. So the whole point of Bhagavad Gita is to get you to be dependent on the spiritual nature instead of being dependent on the material nature. Now, because we're in a disease condition, we foolishly think that it's natural to be dependent on material nature. And we're suspicious of what it would be like to depend on the spiritual nature. We don't suspect enough our false dependency on material nature. Because we've been doing it for so long, birth after birth, we become accustomed to this craziness. Just like people drinking. They just become accustomed to it. As you were saying, they even think it tastes good after a while. They just get accustomed to it. I remember a little kid. My father, whenever he'd come home from the office, he had his beer. And as a little kid, I would go by where he was and kind of smell the glass. Like, ugh. Drink this stuff. But I've heard you get used to it after a while. Well, similarly, birth after birth, you become accustomed to depending on material nature. And that's nothing to be proud of. In fact, that's the cause of your downfall. Feeling comfortable in depending on material nature. Material nature is simply going to do you in. It'll attack you, birth, death, disease, and old age. But you're going to depend on material nature. You hope to get some pleasures for your body and mind. You hope to acquire some gratifying experiences. And therefore you lay your head on the lap of material nature. Srila Prabhupada, he explained once that depending on material nature is like you're a little kid and you lay your head on the lap of your mother. And as soon as you drift off to a peaceful sleep, she cuts your head off. That's what it's like to depend on material nature. You think you're going to get succor and comfort, and you're always destroyed. Birth, death, disease, and old age are destructive processes. But we tend to overlook that. You can try it at your work, amongst your friends. Say, hey, what's new? What's going on? Huh? Just birth, death, disease, and old age. What would your friends say if you told them that?
Me, I'm definitely not crazy.
You work as a musician, so you have that supports you.
It's music supporting me.
You play in clubs, like?
Yeah, I sing.
So, like on the weekends?
Yeah.
So we should never expect to see you on the weekends. You like a band or just yourself?
Solo at the moment, but I'm looking for a band.
Well, you can join the band here. But you play guitar?
Keyboard.
So, your friends see you, hey, what's happening? What's going on? What's trying to? Birth, death, disease, and old age. That's reality. In New York City, a cool answer you can give when someone asks you, hey, what's happening? What's going on? When they first meet you, if you're really cool, you just say, nothing happening but the rent. That's supposed to be a cool answer. You know, every month you gotta pay the rent. Nothing happening but the rent. But you can be even cooler now. Nothing happened but birth, death, disease, and old age. Try it. You're a musician, be creative. you first try it on your girlfriend. What would she say?
I haven't got a girlfriend.
What if your life has less anxiety?
Sure.
So, we should question ourselves. Why is it I feel so comfortable on the lap of illusion? It's been like that for birth after birth. It's a disease. So what Krishna is saying in this verse here, speaking to Arjuna, son of Pritha, in Sanskrit, Partha, because Arjuna's mother and his whole family line are very high caliber persons. Therefore, Krishna is referring to his family line. Because they're his whole family line, they're very powerful spirituals, transcendentalists. So that's real credit. So Krishna's making that known. You're the son of a great mother, a mother who understands the Supreme Absolute Truth. So, O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, they're under the protection of the divine nature. So we need to understand that divine nature. What does it mean to be dwelling under the influence of the spiritual energy, Krishna's spiritual potency? You see, you've got to drive under the influence of something. What do they call it here in the UK if you're driving the alcohol in your system?
Under the
influence? Yeah.
Over the limit.
DUI, driving under the influence? You've got to drive under the influence of something. This is Krishna's point in Bhagavad Gita. You have to be DUI. You have to be under the influence of one nature or the other. Now take your pick. Most people never consider the choice. They just take it for granted that I should be driving under the influence of the material nature. So, let's read a little bit of the purport. You can read the first paragraph.
In this verse, the description of the Mahatma is clearly given. The first sign of the Mahatma is that he is already situated with the divine nature, He is not under the control of material nature. And how is this effective? Let us explain in the 7th chapter. One who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, at once becomes free from the control of material nature.
Okay. Free from the control of material nature. Now there is a mighty goal. As long as you are in the grip of material nature, you must suffer. All your hopes will be defeated. All your plans will be destroyed as long as you remain under the control of material nature. Therefore, the most practical goal for you is how to escape the clutches of material nature. Do you ever think like that?
How to escape?
Then you should.
Yeah, definitely.
When you see old ladies on the street, you should think, I'm going to be like that very soon if I live a full life. You should study their faces, their body, and think, that's what I'm going to be like very soon. True, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
If you live a whole life, that you know, very soon you're going to be like those old ladies. Imagine, and then think, how will I feel? The most practical goal in life is how to escape the control of material nature. There can be no real happiness as long as you're under the gun of material nature, because you'll be forced in so many ways just like when you became 11 or 12, you reached puberty, you were forced to think in certain ways. No choice. Remember how carefree you were before reaching puberty? And all of a sudden, when you came to that age, your head filled with all these anxieties. Am I being noticed? How do I look? How do I look? Forced upon you is consciousness. That's life in the material world. It's forced upon you. Not only psychological changes, but physical changes. Krishna is giving you a program in Bhagavad Gita, how to become free from material nature and take shelter of the spiritual nature, the spiritual world. That is Krishna consciousness. Don't we?
One can become free from the control of material nature as soon as he surrenders his soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Oh, that sounds strong, doesn't it? Surrender your soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What do you think? Surrender your soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Salvation Army or something? What do you call them here?
Jesus Army.
Huh? The Jesus Army. They don't call them the Salvation Army.
Salvation Army.
Yeah. In Australia, they have a short and broody version, so they call it Salvos or Sallies. They all say that here?
The Sally Army.
Huh? The Sally Army. Now they say Sallies or Salvos. So, you might be have that fear. This doesn't sound cool. This doesn't sound hip. Surrender my soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You can imagine telling your friends, what are you doing? You say, I'm surrendering my soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hey, get out of here! No one thinks that you have to be dependent. You have to be surrendered one way or another. Material life means dependency, surrender. You surrender to birth, death, disease, and old age. But no one sees that. Your body is changing. You're surrendered to that. You surrender to the dictates of your body and mind. No one sees that. All day long you simply surrender. At work, at school, at university you have to surrender. At your job you have to surrender. You surrender to the beer, the alcohol. Surrender to the TV. You have to turn on the TV. Fulfill me. Let me see some nice news. That's surrender. When you're playing music on the weekends, can you just do whatever you want?
Not really. There's a certain format you should follow.
Why?
Just certain songs that I like to play.
No, but can you just play whatever you like?
Well, I suppose so, yeah.
Whatever you like, anything.
To a certain degree.
You could start playing classical music.
Like, okay, if it was a certain gig which was in a song and you'd be like, something so bad.
Well, but you suppose you said, well, I don't want to surrender tonight. I'm going to play Bach or Handel. What would happen?
I'd like to put some funky beats behind it.
No. you got to play Bach or Handel. You know, like,
I do get some very open, wide eyes.
I suppose you're playing maybe with some, you got a gig with a classical orchestra or something, and you decide to play hip hop, you know. You have to surrender. Your audience wants something. You know, the employer who owns the club wants something. You got to surrender. Suppose you say, you know, I don't feel like playing tonight. I think I'll come in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and play. What would happen?
You can lose your job.
That's right. So you have to surrender. I remember in my days, before days, there was a real big musician, real famous, and I just really infuriate people. He would pack an arena of 25,000 people waiting, and he wouldn't show up. Or if he did show up, it would be 3 or 4 hours late. Remember Sly Stone? Mm. That was his thing. Oh, Mr. Job. He used to infuriate people. Radio stations would stop playing his music because he fried out so many people, you know. 25,000 people waiting. 3, 4 hours, you know. Show's supposed to start at 8, doesn't come around till 12. Sometimes I didn't show up at all. I'm not going to surrender. If you might show up tonight, I won't show up today. But he got his reactions. I remember one time with my friends and I. The high point of the year was, the so-called spiritual zenith of the year, the event of the century, was a Jimi Hendrix concert. So, all my friends, we'd be ready for that one. It was the ultimate. So, but if he was in a bad mood, he was such a great musician. He could play all his songs sarcastically. He'd show up, but he would just, he'd just play all his, he'd just go through it, you know? He'd play for 45 minutes instead of an hour and a half or 2 hours. He'd just do everything sarcastically. And so my friend, you'd all be disappointed. Oh, she wouldn't do that. So this is all about surrender and not surrender. Musicians are like, I'm not going to surrender. But I have to surrender. Remember Sly Stone? He used to say, I'll never do a greatest hits album. But because he wasn't fulfilling his contract, his record company put out a greatest hits album on him. But he said he'd never do it. You have to surrender. Contract. I know all these things about when I was in university, I was a nighttime DJ on the radio. FM, 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. You know what kind of people are up at that time. The radio show was called Diversions. So anyway. Musician, photographer, you gotta surrender. So, why do you freak out when you read surrender my soul to the Supreme Personality of God? Your soul surrendered one way or another. Just think, the next time you watch the news, you're surrendering. Therefore, since you must be dependent, you must find out what is the best way to be dependent. Where's the best shelter? That is what Krishna is trying to convince you of in Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. Alright, go on, read.
The marginal potency. As soon as the living entity is freed from the control of material nature, he is put under the guidance of the spiritual nature. The guidance of the spiritual nature is called Daivya Prakriti, divine nature. So when one is promoted in that way, by surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one attains to the stage of great soul, Mahatma.
Yes. So, just remember this point. It's one surrender or the other. But because we have this anti-Krishna rebellion in us, rebellious feeling, we just flinch when we hear surrender my soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if we talk about surrendering to material nature,
yeah, well,
it's part of life, you know? Practical, you know? I'm sure you remember in relationships you had to surrender, didn't you?
Yeah. Or struggle.
Right, right. Exactly. That's a good mantra. Surrender or struggle. How long did it take you to realize that?
Maybe a couple of months.
What did you think at first?
I think relationship and the service purposes for me as well. Yeah.
Which was?
Comfort, love, attention, affection, give and take. And realize all the things you said before, very enlightening what you said earlier on about how people are looking for, what people get out of relationships.
Mm-hmm. At first you thought it was going to be that?
First of all, I thought it would be more of a sharing, a love situation. But it seems like things about ulterior motives in some ways.
Like what kind of ulterior motive?
Relief of some sort.
Someone wants to use you for relief?
Yeah.
But isn't that a fair trade? Because you also want relief, right?
Yes, yeah, sure.
So, why would that disturb you, that someone wanted to leave? Everyone wants relief.
No, there's certainly a personal attack wave, it's just that that's not what I'm looking for. I realize that's not what I was looking for.
You weren't looking for relief?
Not that kind of relief.
Ah. And then the demands that you have to focus on this person.
I have to surrender.
Yeah. One pointed. And you start to think, hey, this is a bit too much, right? You don't mind the know, a bit of dallying here and there every few days, but complete focus day after day after day. It's too much, isn't it? Mm. You feel like, I don't have any space.
I have a relationship for work. If you're both like-minded and you both know that you're not going to find that secure from another person, you have to find it in yourself, first of all, with God, where you work with Krishna.
Yeah.
And be parallel, you can walk parallel.
Otherwise, you feel like you're, you know, like you're in front of a vacuum cleaner that's always, a powerful vacuum cleaner that's always on. Men don't like this. They want to play, but they don't want to pay. You got to pay with your focus, your attention. Can't look at anything else. You just I let the vacuum cleaner just. You're supposed to enjoy it too. And if you look like you don't enjoy it, oh boy. What's the matter? Don't you like being, you know, in front of this vacuum cleaner that's always on? Making a loud noise. That's just how men look at it. I'm not saying it's, you know, it's the. That's just the man's thing. That's how they view it. Ladies don't understand it. So, yes, that's a good one. I'll remember that. Surrender or struggle? So just like you said, people look towards relationships, taking shelter of relationships in order to provide them with certain things. That's like how people look at the material nature as a whole. Provide me with something. Fulfill me. Enriching me. They're surrendering. But they don't understand. Their natural constitutional position is to surrender to Krishna. Surrendering to Krishna means connecting to the source of unlimited pleasure. So you have to compare. What are the benefits? You surrender to material nature, you get one set of benefits, suppose. You surrender to Krishna, you get another set of benefits. The Mahatma simply surrenders to Krishna. Surrenders to the divine energy, not the material energy. All right, any questions?
Yeah. I think my understanding of Krishna is, this is like the first time I've actually sat down and listened to something as a reference to this. I mean, I've been in gospel choirs and I've been in this church and I've always been searching for something. There seems to be very much a lot of similarities. A lot of religions or beliefs.
Christianity is, as Jesus taught it, is bhakti yoga in a very simplified form. Very simplified form. As Jesus said, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, lean not unto thy own understanding. It's bhakti yoga. It's simple though. Like first grade arithmetic, 1 + 1 = 2. It's right, but it's very simple. As a human being, it is your responsibility to get the most comprehensive, in-depth knowledge of God possible. The more you become aware of God, the greater your love can be. That was supposedly one of the joys in a relationship. You get to know somebody, you get to know them more and more, and it's like a whole thing unfolding every day. It's impossible to be like that because the person is limited. The body is limited, the mind is limited. But with Krishna, it is possible. So the more you know about the Supreme Lord, the more your love grows. Therefore, it is to your advantage to get the most comprehensive, in-depth knowledge of God as possible. That is the advantage of Bhagavad Gita. The science of the Supreme is the greatest science. So that feeling you get in the gospel choir, yes, that's a genuine feeling. It's just small. Why is it small? Because the people's lifestyles aren't fully spiritual, and they don't have so much knowledge of the spiritual science. But still, the sentiment is correct. In Bhagavad Gita, with Bhakti Yoga, you get the perfect combination of the head and the heart. Gospel music is very hearty. Heart. And other styles of Christianity are more for the head, like theology and like that. But Bhagavad Gita is the perfect blend of the head and the heart. So I recommend you make a study of Bhagavad Gita from cover to cover. It'll be a great treat for yourself. Maybe you can make music about it.
I've already got that idea already.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. If George Harrison could do it, you could do it. You could do it too.
Oh, yeah.
Stevie Wonder could do it, you could do it. Any other questions? Refreshments. Okay, let's all get refreshed. More. Thank you for your company tonight.
I
have to give us a demonstration.
Okay.
I'm you have keyboards here?
Yeah, one does.
You have to give us a demonstration.
Okay.
I don't know. Pictures this week?
I've got a few, yeah.
Check them out?
Yeah.
Right. Evocative?
Some good ones.
Ah. I mean, fine, huh?
Yeah. I've got the same ball.
Yeah. Good? The ladies They always flinch a bit when I start talking about the realities of male nature. Even our own ladies here, they're like, oh no, it can't be. Why is that?
It's just
terrifying. So then they'll think it's horrible. Right? You know that the men don't think it's horrible. They think it's life. It's like the ruining of a dream, huh?
The look on people's face as they were watching, as they were playing the game, they're totally absorbed in this video game. Have you seen that? I saw it in a magazine once. And they're just looking and they're just like, they're like, zombies, that sort of stuff.
You saw it in a video arcade?
This was in a magazine, but it was an exhibition of this one photographer. He'd done this exhibit that he installed it in and just showing how people look when they're totally focused 100% on it and competing in it.
We're getting into full meetings. I'm with the FaceTime building, so it's really not going to be a
You get really bad.
through to it, if that's in the room.
Sorry about that.
It's all right. Some of the stuff happens, but even if people look at us, that's the best.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'll see you back.
fate of a single tree. Brahma's fate of a single tree. Not this, not the cheese. She was like,
When you find out if you have more flats to do.
I'm really fine.
I'm fine.
Not in that way, but in the Christian example of the issue of the same
10 chapters in a week. 10 chapters, that's some funny, I'm going to book every 2 weeks.
Great.
I want to get out of the way and then start.